At Goodfellow, we are proud to support Outside In, a charity that aims to provide a platform for artists who face significant barriers to the art world due to health, disability, social circumstances, or isolation. To find out more information or to donate, head to our website materialshub.com/podcast.
Welcome to the Materials Inside podcast by Goodfellow, the podcast that will bring materials, knowledge and science, along with art and design, together in the same podcast. Goodfellow is a UK company based in Huntingdon that supplies over 70,000 materials to different industries all over the world. Their team of scientists and sales and marketing experts want to make the materials world accessible to everyone. During the next few weeks, we will be talking about materials from aluminium to zinc for applications from satellites to planes, cars, ventilators, pieces of art and furniture. How do we link it all? Wait and see, or even better, listen to our podcasts. Presented by Joel Alexio, the Global Marketing Manager of Goodfellow, he will be speaking with a range of guests from industry professionals to public figures, artists, celebrities, and Goodfellow's own experts.
The material for today is tantalum. Tantalum is a transition metal on the periodic table. Sat between hafnium and tungsten, it has the atomic number of 73. First discovered in 1802 by A.G. Eckenberg in Sweden, tantalum was named after the Greek mythological character Tantalus. Tantalus was punished by being submerged in water but unable to drink. This resonates with tantalum due to his high resistance to acids. Tantalum is chemically so similar to niobium that until 1844 they were considered to be the same chemical element. In their raw state, tantalum and niobium are usually found together. Although tantalum is not the most well-known metal, it's used in almost all modern electrical devices, mobile phones, computers and televisions. So, whether you realize or not, most people will have several belongings contain tantalum. Later, Alan Scott will join me to discuss his passion for tantalum and other metals. After working for Goodfellow for over 40 years, Alan knows all about Goodfellow's rich history. We will talk about how far back Goodfellow's passion goes for art, charity, and green materials. But first, series regulars Aphrodite and Adam join me to explore the science behind the materials. Hello, Aphrodite. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Joel.
Hi, Joe.
Today we're going to talk about tantalum, this very, very interesting material. So first of all, Aphrodite, this has some connections with you. It came from the Greek mythology. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about how the name of tantalum came up?
As you say, Tantalus was initially known for having been welcomed to Zeus' table in Olympus. However, it is said that he has stolen ambrosia and nectar to bring back to his people or tribe, if we want to say it like this, and he revealed the secrets of the gods. That was the reason why Zeus has punished him for the temptation without satisfaction. So he was standing in a pool of water beneath of a fruit tree with low branches. So whenever he wanted to reach the fruit or the branches were raising up and he couldn't eat. And whenever he wanted to drink, then the water was receded, and that is why tantalum is resistant to a lot of chemicals and of course water. That is why this element is called tantalum.
Adam, Goodfellow have a big range of offers, different varieties of this material. What are the benefits of each one of them?
We have tantalum in lots of different forms. So obviously depending on what the application is, we can supply it in a wire or foil or evaporation material if you're doing coatings. So depending on what the material is needed for, could be billets for machining, then we've got all of that semi-finished, ready for people to get going.
And they're all available on our website, goodfellow.com. For that, one of the properties of this material is the high melting point that make it very interesting for applications and where we have the material exposed to high temperatures. Any examples of applications for this material at high temperatures?
Yeah, tantalum is a part of the refractory metals group, which are widely used as a minor components in alloys or for different applications. So we have different refractory metals, but I will discuss only for tantalum, and they have very high melting points, which define most of their applications. So also grip resistance is a key property of this material, and this melting point together with the grip resistance gives all the potential for different applications, I would say, and the resistance against deformation at high temperature make this metal suitable against strong forces at high temperature, or for example in jet engines, or used during forging. There are several applications that I can name. Actually, I would say only applications for high temperature and wear resistance.
And are there any other metals with similar characteristics?
They are the refractory metals, and refractory metals like these are niobium, for example, tungsten, molybdenum, and rhenium. These are the refractory metals, and they have very high melting points and boiling points. However, they are different in regarding the density and the mechanical properties, because they belong to different groups in the periodic table as well.
It sounds like tantalum may have lots of advantage. Adam, any disadvantage of using this material instead of, for instance, ceramics?
So comparing refractory metals to ceramics is interesting. A lot of the time they're both used in harsh environments, whereas ceramics would be used if you wanted something that was thermally or electrically resistant rather than conductive. I suppose the main drawbacks to using something like tantalum is that it's very dense, so therefore very heavy, so it can add a lot of weight to an assembly, and also it's a lot more expensive than using a stainless steel or a something like that.
So that could be one of the disadvantages if you have a place where you need to be careful with the weight.
Yeah, you're probably not going to use tantalum unless you need to take advantage of one of its specific properties for your application.
And what type of industries would you see tantalum being? I've let you already talk about some of the applications. What about industries that you can see that this material being used?
So it's widely used in the electronics industry, as we already talked about. It's also used in instrumentation, in space. You'll find it, I think, across most sectors in different applications. Another area that it's used in a lot of medical equipment as well. One of the things about tantalum is that it's obviously resistant to lots of chemicals and corrosion. It's also in the body as well, so it is possible to use it in implants and in medical applications.
That was my next question about that. This can be used for medical applications. We don't supply normally materials to that type of industry, but can we talk a little bit more about how can this material be used for medical, Aphrodite?
Tantalum is inert to practically all organic and inorganic compounds, and has found that it can be used for surgical appliances because it's completely immune to body liquids. That's very, very important. So that was found in 2001, actually. Also, it has great biocompatibility and excellent. And now, Adam, I would like you to help me with this English word, osseointegration properties. And this is very, very interesting because it can be used for bone implants interfaces or cementless implants. For example, it can be used on our hips or knees replacement fixtures, as a monofilament for in braided wires for skin closure or tendons, and nerve repair as foils and seeds for nerve anastomoses, clips for vessels, staples for other surgeries that we are using for surgery, again, seats and plates for cranioplasty and for the skull, and several applications. It can also be used for orthopedic maker balls or beads as well, that we use in our body when we have an accident, or as well, tantalum can be used to coat carbon foam scaffolds, so that creates biocompatibility more than having just a carbon foam scaffold, and it can be used for the replacement of bones, implants, or even dental implants. So looking ahead, I would say additive manufacturing holds a great potential for the use of tantalum in medical applications as well, because you can use the tantalum powder in additive manufacturing, let's say, and then you can build up all what we have said before.
Wow, there's lots of applications. We just supply sputtering targets in this material, and I'm just looking at our Materials Hub website, and of course we have the tantalum sputtering targets, and it's described as a dark blue gray metal. How does the metal get this color? Does any one of you know how that happened? It's just because it's quite interesting for our design artist world too.
I suppose that's the intrinsic colour of tantalum, so that the wavelengths of light that it will absorb and reflect obviously give it its colour. Have you got anything else that you could add to that, Aphrodite?
Actually, I would say that tantalum usually passivates and it becomes a tantalum oxide on the top. That's also which gives the corrosion resistance. But this tantalum oxide has different, as Adam said, different colours.
I suppose one interesting thing about refractory metals is you can create, through heating, you can create quite interesting patterns, right, Aphrodite, in terms of the films and the layers that then form on them.
That's true, but I would say more with copper and iron.
Especially because tantalum is high resistant to temperatures. It don't change any of its properties under 150 degrees, if that's right information, I'm sure it is. So probably why tantalum is probably difficult to change on the color with temperature. So I'll just ask this question. I know that is a difficult one because it was just my curiosity coming up about the color of the material. But we talk about the material itself and the density. Is that not a disadvantage to use this material, for instance, for things like try to cut the material? Is that make the material more complicated to use?
I think tantalum is relatively easy to work with. It will wear tools out faster than something like a steel. But it's a relatively malleable metal that can be worked and machined. You would need to use, carbide cutting tools and things like that. But it can obviously be drawn into wires and rolled into sheets and foils. So I think it's relatively easy to work with.
You're absolutely right, but at temperatures below the room temperature, so let's say that we're putting the tantalum at the fridge, all right, or even if we have, cubes, ice cubes, all right, and then we're cooling down below the room temperature, then it is very easy to work. So that's what I would suggest to all the designers that are listening to us. The hardness increase, though, when it is cold working, and this become subsequently brittle, so they should be a little bit aware when they're milling it and they're trying to make it in a shape, that's all. But yes, Adam, you're absolutely right.
What about the cost of this material, Adam? Is it expensive material? We talk about other materials already here, also precious metals, but is very expensive this material compared with other materials?
It's relatively widely used, so the expense of it comes from it being harder to refine and produce into the semi-finished shapes, but it's obviously more expensive than steels and aluminiums and coppers and things that are kind of widely used. But there's obviously a decent demand for tantalum for lots of different applications. So it's not. I would say it's probably somewhere in the middle cost wise. That obviously depends on purity and it depends on the form and
also to do with the quantities, isn't it? Because with us the price will change with the quantity of the material that is needed.
Yeah, that's right. So if you need a larger volume, then per gram or per piece, then the price will be more competitive.
But compare this with, for instance, as I mentioned, precious metals is a good replacement on a cost.
If there's an application where you're using a precious metal and you might be able to substitute that with a refractory metal. I think of some examples maybe with sensor wires where actually the corrosion resistance of a tantalum or a niobium is sufficient and you don't need to use platinum or something, then replacing the precious metal with a refractory metal would see a cost saving.
Is possible to mix tantalum with other materials?
Yes, you could use components made in ceramic and tantalum, and it would also be possible to produce metallized ceramics. Depending on what the ceramic is, you might need to use other layers to be able to bond the tantalum layer to the ceramic, but yes, it's possible.
Also, you can use, let's say, tantalum, especially again the tantalum oxide, upon glass, so you coat a glass, so it has higher index of refraction, and this is used in camera lenses, which might be of interest.
That's a different application from the ones that we're talking, but very interesting. Just going through, like I said, our Materials Hub website have information about the tantalum. You also can send us requests for materials through our marketing@goodfellow.com email address, and we will talk about any other materials. I think we have all the information that we need regarding tantalum. So I don't know if you want to add anything else more for this material.
I'm sure there's lots and lots more that we could talk about, but not in the time that we've got for this podcast.
I think for this one is good. Thank you very much for your time, and we definitely will speak very soon about a few other materials.
Thank you, Joel.
Thanks, Joel.
Materials Inside and Outside In have teamed up in their mission to make the art and materials world more accessible to everyone. We invite you to join us by sharing this podcast and donating on our website Materials Hub, where 100% of the donations will go towards supporting artists from marginalized groups.
Outside In pretty much started on an experience that happened in a period of my life when I'd sort of fallen out of love with the art world, and I ended up volunteering for a charity working with people with learning disabilities. I was immediately struck by the talent of the people at that table. You know, at the time, I remember thinking, oh my God, how lucky, you know, what a thing to have found.
And just seeing how inspired and passionate they are about what they've been doing is really rewarding.
One of the latest exhibition openings we had was for our recent national exhibition called Environments. For the artists to be in that space and witness people really valuing their work, buying it, just was so special to watch.
So the aims of the charity are to see it become truly national, and people will then know the name Outside In.
The aspiration is to change the art world, and you know, you'd hope at a certain point that you'd become, you know, not needed.
Which is why it's still so important that we are running these exhibitions, that we're representing the artists that we do represent.
I hope that, you know, we'd get to that point where the art world is a much fairer place. And then I could step back.
Next up, we have Alan Scott, a retired Goodfellow employee. Alan moved to Cambridge when taking the job at Goodfellow at the end of the 70s. With a huge knowledge base, Alan was often the go-to guy at Goodfellow. Hello, Alan. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hello, Joel. It's nice to speak with you.
It's great to have you here. So let me start to ask you a few questions about materials and metals, of course. At what point did you become interested in materials and, of course, special in metals?
I grew up around metals. My father worked in them for, well, basically all his life. So I was always around iron and steel as a child. I was interested, but it wasn't my first choice to go to university and do.
What was your first choice?
I wanted to be an environmental engineer. That's a very different career, but that didn't work out, and I ended up doing metallurgy at university. And that did work out really rather well.
And I believe you start working with Goodfellow just right out of the university, is that correct?
Yeah, it was my second real job. I'd had a year off in the middle of my degree, and I had worked for a crane manufacturer for 12 months. But yes, this was the first real job from university.
When you joined Goodfellow, what was your first job with us, and how did that progress?
I worked in the chemistry laboratory, producing chemically thin foils. Very quickly, I moved on to being the rolling technician and developed many of the techniques that are currently used by Goodfellow in rolling today. Eventually, I ran the laboratory, I ran the workshop, and eventually in around about mid-1990s, I moved on to the sales side of the business.
When did you start at Goodfellow?
August 1978.
Very precise. So you enjoyed work at Goodfellow because you stayed so long. What are your fondest memories of your time here?
Some of my nicest memories of working for Goodfellow are the people. Some of the business trips I got to do over the years, especially those 20-plus trips that I made to CERN from about 1995 to 2019. The people I was working with were outstanding.
Oh, that's great to hear, because of course most of the people are still here with us, and of course I also remember a few of those trips with you. So when I joined Goodfellow just almost 6 years ago now, you were the person to go if we had any technical question. How's that happen?
It happens over the years. In the late 90s, early 2000s, I was one of two or three possible technical people working in sales. And of course, over the years, you pick up an awful lot from the research you've done to help customers and research you've done within house to facilitate manufacture. It was good. Basically once the internet came along, if you didn't know the answer, you could always find it pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was a big change for the company and for the business. But then it's interesting to see how things change back again, because we, in the last few years, in the last 4 or 5 years, we actually set up a full technical department with lots of people with lots of experience. We have Aphrodite here as the manager. We have already other colleagues from the technical team, like Jason talking about a pair of skies. And when you left, you were part of that team too.
Yes, I was. I was part of Aphrodite's team for probably 2 or 3 years, and we worked very well together.
So this conversation, of course, we want to know a lot about you, but it's about a specific material, tantalum. And of course, being a metallurgist, you worked with tantalum. What makes this material so special?
It's a very nice material to work with. It's in its annealed condition, it is very ductile, very malleable. It has a very high corrosion resistance at low temperatures, which is why it's used a lot in the chemical industry for reaction vessels, etc. But many years ago, I spent quite a lot of time rolling tantalum to specific thicknesses of foil. The best thickness I ever got to was half a micron, which is absolutely fantastic and possibly not repeatable. But it's got so many different uses, from furnaces to mobile phones. It's a really nice material. It really is. And I've worked with it many, many times.
And it is an interesting material. We spoke earlier with Aphrodite and Adam about that too. And the places where you can find tantalum nowadays is quite incredible. And what is your favorite metal or any material?
I haven't got any favourites, I suspect. If I had to put a favourite, I would say the precious metals. Gold, platinum, palladium, rhodium. They're all very workable. They're nice materials to work with. They're non-corrosive. Rhodium's a little bit difficult. I have over the years worked with all of them. You know, they're really nice materials to work with, apart from the intrinsic fact that they have their high value.
Alan, you mentioned earlier about the beginning of your career and working with foils and in the rolling department. And I also know, because of course we spoke about that before, but the techniques to get those foils were very different from the ones that we have nowadays. Do you want to talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, when I first joined the company, way back in 1978, most of the foils that we produced were made by a chemical route, and some of these manufacturing processes were really unpleasant. They depended on chemicals like cyanide, hydrofluoric acid, which is a really corrosive, nasty material. And one of the things we wanted to do was to move more of the production of the metal foils over to rolling production. And in my first couple of years with Goodfellow, as I said earlier, I spent a lot of time developing our rolling techniques, finding out which foils would roll, which wouldn't, which still had to continue to be made chemically. And there are about 8 or 9 which still are, I believe. That was my first few years with the company.
And do you think that that change is also to do with the fact that Goodfellow has been very environmentally friendly or tried to be more green in the production?
Yeah, I think over the years, yes. We were, nobody likes working with chemicals like cyanide or chemicals which could cause harm either to the individual or to the environment. And I think that was always something that drove Goodfellow in that respect.
Yeah, that's great and interesting, of course, to know that we are focused on that. This series, this first series of the podcast, of course, is focusing in art, in the art world. And we also have a charity that we are working with. Was Goodfellow always linked or have good relationship with the art world?
Yes, but I suspect that the links were rather more tenuous at the time I joined the company. There was always an interest, and we would try and support anyone who asked. But I rather suspect we didn't go out looking for it, i.e. we're now more proactive.
How's that happened in the past, the connection with the art? Well, you said it was more sporadic, and how's that happened before?
Yeah, it really depended on people contacting us and, us trying to help them or donating some materials to them, or even so much as making a small cash donation. And this is also true of the charities the company supported.
And in the last 40 years, what do you think was the big changes in kind of the attitude towards inspiring new people to join this scientific world of materials?
Very difficult to say. I think it's certainly possibly because some of the senior management were more driven in that direction as time went on. But there's nothing I could actually put my finger on and say that is the point at which things started to change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, like I said, it's just get your opinion. We've been here for so long with Goodfellow. It's interesting to talk to you. Of course, me and you had lots of conversations the last few years working together. So you left Goodfellow in 2019, just a few months before the pandemic hits and you retired and try to enjoy your retirement. How did COVID affect your first plans?
Well, it didn't. Obviously, the first 5 or 6 months were actually quite fun. We had a holiday in Scotland. We did lots of weekends away and stuff, and that's how we would have expected to continue. However, COVID came along, and the 2 half-planned road trips within Europe had to be put on hold and then cancelled. I spent far more time at home than I ever intended. But then so has everybody else in the last 12 months.
I meant to say, how did you keep yourself busy? That was, I think, is what you're going to answer anyway, yeah.
Gardening, helping out with the plants which were used to support the local food bank, and having a long walk every day. And then eventually when things loosened up last year, we managed to go away for a couple of days and then have a holiday in October last year before everything clamped down again. So yeah, it wasn't difficult to keep busy.
Good to hear. And what is your future interest with materials throughout your retirement now?
Well, apart from keeping an eye on what Goodfellow's up to, keeping an eye on what CERN are doing and people like the European Space Agency, it's just a general interest. I'm not actively trying to pursue anything with materials at the moment. But yeah, I'm always going to be interested in what people are doing with materials and who's doing what, basically.
You moved from up north to Cambridge around 1978 when you joined Goodfellow. What are your future plans?
Very much up in the air. There is a thought which makes me want to move back to my native Cumbria. I also like living in East Anglia and would be happy to stay here. So nothing has yet been decided, but probably will be within the next 6 months.
Alan, thank you very much for your time to come to speak with us and tell us a little bit about your passion with metals and, of course, the time that you've been with us, a good fellow. We all miss you.
No, thank you very much.
We will definitely speak with you again very soon, and thank you for your time today.
Well, I do hope to be able to rather do more than speak with you and actually come and see you all in person before too long.
Yes, we all want to do that at some point very soon. Thank you very much. Join us next week when we'll be talking about Mako. Aphrodite and Adam will be there to expertly explain all the technical details. We will also be joined by Colin Hillman, a transition group artist who works with ceramics. Follow us on Instagram page for more information on upcoming episodes. I go live with guests to cover any questions you may have missed on the podcast. We also welcome questions from listeners, and the best way to put those questions to us is via Instagram, materials_inside.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. You can access all the information on the website www.materialshub.com. The images and any case studies mentioned can also be found at www.goodfellow.com/news/case-studies. This podcast is also available on alternative podcast directories including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Deezer, TuneIn, Overcast and many more.
We hope you have enjoyed this podcast and invite you to help us in supporting Outside In, the charity which aims to make the art world a fair place for everyone. Donations, no matter how big or small, make a huge difference to artists who have struggled to make themselves heard. We welcome you to join us in supporting Outside In. For all the information, visit the website materialshub.com/podcast.